The arduous journey from Syria to Europe in the current migrant crisis makes it harder to remember that the Arab world and Europe actually border each other in the West. For centuries, people have moved from the North African nation of Morocco across the Straits of Gibraltar to Spain and back again. The attacks in Paris and in Brussels in the last 6 months have been reminders of just how much the people of Morocco have merged into the cultures of Europe and where they have not. Of the three radicalized individuals who died in Brussels in March, all were born to Moroccan parents. At least three of the Paris attackers who brutalized the city last November were also second-generation Moroccan immigrants. Today, some 3 million Moroccans live across the Mediterranean, and that is not counting the descendants of earlier immigrants. Meanwhile, Morocco is also a destination for people fleeing conflict zones from the east. So Morocco is both a host and source for migrants. We turn to Kelsey Norman, a doctoral candidate at the University of California.
Prior to the 1990s, it was quite easy to cross the area that you mentioned, the Strait of Gibraltar, from Morocco into Spain. And then after about the year 2000, it became much more difficult to do that. But in 2013, there was this mass policy shift at the governmental level that will now allow irregular migrants who have been in Morocco that meet certain criteria. So, for example, if they've been in Morocco up to 5 years and they can document that, then they're eligible for this regularization campaign.
So it's easier to come to Morocco and get a pathway to citizenship than it would ever be in Europe or the United States.
Well, it's not a pathway to citizenship. But what it is offering is a chance for these migrants who have been there in an irregular position, which made it really hard for them to find work in the formal economy or even to find housing for landlords being willing to accept them. Now they have a chance to have a regular status in Morocco. And hopefully this will also entail things like integration measures at the governmental level.
Do the 3 million Moroccans living in Europe believe they are assimilated, believe they are a part of this European family, or do they feel as though they are always to be the other?
Well, I think it's hard to talk about them as a massive group. It varies so much by country as well, whether Moroccans would be in Belgium or in France or maybe in the Netherlands, and how those different host states have handled integration measures. Many Moroccans see themselves as sort of living these binary lives. You know, they'll have a home in Morocco, but then they also feel very European. And we can talk about second and third generation immigrants who might not have ever grown up in Morocco, and so they only know Europe. But I imagine they're feeling, you know, this backlash from what they consider to be their home in light of what's happened in Paris and in Belgium over the past couple months.
Who are the individuals who would be involved in something like ISIS, and how do they distinguish themselves from the individuals who want to live peacefully? I mean, aside from doing the violence that they do.
Interestingly, those individuals that have defected that we know about and gone to Syria or Iraq are generally second or third generation immigrants. So it's interesting that they are not the people who made a voyage from a place like Morocco themselves. It's, you know, their grandchildren. So I think it speaks more to the failure of integration measures in host states in Europe, as opposed to the inclination of any of these people. It's unlikely you'll see a first generation immigrant defecting because they've gone through such a struggle in order to get to Europe in the first place.
Why does that sense of struggle and sense of bonding go away within the family? How does the struggle of the first generation become an anger by the third generation?
The majority of Moroccans going to France in the 60s and 70s were doing things like working in coal mining, you know, jobs that Europeans themselves did not want because they don't pay well, they're dangerous. So these individuals really had to struggle in order to make it safe and to find themselves in hopefully a regular position for their immigrant children. So I think the children might grow up with a different sort of expectation. They might think of themselves solely as European and yet still face things like xenophobia and racism from society. And so maybe they just never quite feel welcomed.
Kelsey Norman is a doctoral candidate at the University of California, Irvine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mohamed Zefzaf grew up in the Molenbeek neighborhood of Brussels, a neighborhood most recently overrun with cameras, reporters, and police, as law enforcement conducted a manhunt for the shooters in the Paris and Brussels attacks. Mohamed Zefzaf's family, originally from Morocco, was one of many who came to Europe after the Second World War as part of a guest worker program. After last month's attack in Brussels, Mohamed said it was important to share another story of Molenbeek, one of strength, resilience, family love, and treasured memories of better times.
I could tell you fantastic, wonderful stories of coming to Brussels when I was 10. And across the street, there was a cafe. It was open almost all night. And one day I heard Ne me quitte pas, which is a Jacques Brel song.
Ne me quitte pas, il faut oublier, tout peut s'oublier, qui s'enfuit déjà, oublier le temps des malentendus et le temps perdu, à savoir comment.
And I just loved it. And then the old lady, she was like in her 60s then, and we talked about it. She told me about it. And there was a connection between me as a child and this 65-year-old lady, Belgian. And through music, art, we got to a place where I think it was beautiful. And that's the kind of things that we have to exchange, you know, and not hate violence.
What did she give you to eat?
She gave me French fries with mayonnaise.
Of course.
That's the only way to have it.
How would you say the influx of Moroccans in Europe has been affected by all of this turmoil that we've seen in Belgium and France over the last year or so?
Well, I think that certainly it has exasperated the situation. I don't think Europe is ready culturally or probably even economically to deal with such a huge number. And they haven't dealt with the people who have been there for generations. So you can see that what may happen as a result of this influx.
And in the case of the Moroccans, you're really a pioneer community in the sense that Moroccans have been on the move for quite some time, whether we're talking about Moroccan Muslims, Moroccan Jews, Moroccan Christians.
Yes, we have. In fact, we can go back to World War II when Moroccan soldiers fought alongside French soldiers and then the Second World War. And so it goes way back. But in terms of the Moroccans workers, they were part of what was called a guest program in the 50s and 60s. Pretty much after the end of the Second World War, where they needed workers, laborers. And so they invited them, in quotation mark here, as guest workers. And when the Moroccans came to Brussels or Europe, it was with the idea, especially from the European side, that they were basically temporary workers, that they would work, build Europe, and then go back home. But, you know, one of the my favorite singer and poet, Jacques Brel, said to that effect that we asked for workers and we got people. People that have children, that have families, that create relationships and all of that. And I think at the end, the Europeans, Belgium, if you will, in this instance, did not really create anything for them. They were abandoned, left alone in these areas, these ghettos. Now, never really, as I said somewhere before, to condone any of that, but there are reasons when you have a child that is 18 or 19 who has no future, nothing ahead, and you have these people who seduce them with this this philosophy, which, you know, is a philosophy of death. And as a Muslim, I find that abhorrent, but I think it's a very, very complex issue, John. It's not the headlines. It's we have to go at some point beyond the headlines.
Is there a Moroccan nationalism at work here?
You know, Morocco is unique in the sense that, geographically speaking, it is between the Atlantic and the Mediterranean, across from Europe and Africa. It has a great deal of influence from many parts of the world for millennia. And so we always had this pride of being unique, in that we were always tolerant. But I've been here for a long time. I left Morocco a long time ago. But my identity is Moroccan. It's because of that I can deal with what's happening, and I can deal with a lot of things in my life. That anchor, that what we call, what they call in French, Marocanité. It is among the Jews in Morocco. It's among the Jews in Israel. It's among the Muslims here. It's in Europe. It's not nationalism. Nationalism is not, that's not the word. The word is more like pride and love for who we are, and we would like to spread that around the world. Now, just on that issue, Morocco, a small country, has created last year a center called the King Mohammed VI International Imam Training Centers, which is in Rabat. And it deals with training imams in the area of the moderate, the tolerant, the loving aspect of Islam. And it so happened now that imams in Russia, France, African countries come to Rabat, to Morocco, and to this beautiful center where they're trying to teach them the moderate aspect of Islam. So people say, we're not doing anything. You have to go down to Rabat, to Morocco, and see what the Moroccans, what they are doing in terms of trying to create a, what they call a rapprochement between people.
Do you think Europe, on its side, for its part, has missed the chance to develop a standardized strategy regarding immigration, regarding how you're going to be able to work, how you're going to be received, the reception that you're going to get when you arrive in Belgium or France or any other European country?
There have been studies done on this. It's a well-known study called the Chicago Resume, in which you would send two similar resumes.
Bye-bye.
With the identical experience in education, but the names are different. One is Jean, and the other one is Abdullah. And you send that out to 10,000 people. Jean will get 50% more phone calls for a job. This is a fact. So if you are Moroccan or North African living, actually born in Belgium or in France, and you feel rejected by the fact that you can't get a job, you have no prospect, you have no future, surely there's a failure there. But we must, we should, we need to go beyond failure, beyond blaming, beyond finger pointing. Because if we do not, the cycle will continue, sadly. I think it's time to now say, what can we do? Last year, at the climate conference in Paris, 200 countries came together and agreed to cut down carbon emission. Why can't we have 200 ministers of education getting together and creating a curriculum, or perhaps on the basis of the Human Rights Declaration, that we can teach that to our children all over the world, not just the Muslims, everybody? That is, I think, the crux. That's, I think, where we have to go, John.
Mohammed Zafzaf, thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.